The prophet Jeremiah writes, "Peace, peace, when there is no peace." Surely that is for today.
Because Bible prophecy has never been about nations and the way they interact between each other. It's about nations and the way they interact with Israel. Israel is the center of Bible prophecy.
Welcome to Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell, Radio for the Remnant. Brought to you by Olive Tree Ministries. In part one of our program, Jan Markell talks to Israeli Bible teacher and author Amir Sarfati. In part two, Pastor Josh Schwartz and Ken Michael interview a popular pastor, Gary Hamrick. If you are having trouble keeping up with current events, we'll try to break them down for you. Here is today's programming.
But I can tell you that I don't think the Iranian regime will be toppled on one hand, but on the other hand, I don't think they'll reach a nuclear weapon. Because if you do, you don't need to join Russia or Turkey. No one is going to touch you anyway. So my prediction, based on these two assumptions that are from the Bible, is that they're going to get hit, and they're going to wait for the moment that America is weak and that they can join Russia and Turkey to come against Israel. And now comes maybe the brightest thing in this whole dark story. I believe that the number one thing that will cause America to almost dissolve is the rapture of the church. I want to be out of here. First, I want a new body, because this tent is not for me. I want a building, and I want to be in the presence of the Lord whenever He comes to take us and meet with us in the clouds. Until then, we are up for an unbelievable ride on a roller coaster, emotional roller coaster, physical roller coaster. It's going to be amazing. But remember, 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 Jesus is coming soon.
Glad you can join me for Understanding the Times Radio. I hope that little soundbite was an appropriate tease into the programming that we have for you today. And many of you follow the ministry of Behold Israel and Amir Sarfati. I've brought to the Twin Cities conference activity on, I believe, five occasions, and we love his insights into current events, into the Middle East, into eschatology, more specifically, directly concerning Israel. And you just heard him remind you in that introductory clip that Jesus is indeed coming soon. Now, just a quick reminder, we carry a couple of his books and workbook, Discovering Daniel and Revealing Revelation, both in my online store. And each time I talk to Amir, by the way, I want to remind my audience to be a part of his Telegram channel on social media. If you're trying to keep up with what's happening from a biblical perspective, there's nothing like Amir's Telegram channel, which I check probably half a dozen times a day, and you can learn more at beholdisrael.org. Amir, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jan. It's an honor to be on your show again.
You have watched America in transition here. A new administration. Joe Biden and company were, quite frankly, a burden to every Israeli and every American as well. How do you see things differently now? Obviously, Israel now has a friend back in the White House.
Absolutely. Joe Biden, I'm not even sure how much he was in control of his own administration. I think it was just an extension of the Obama administration. But definitely, we have our friend back in the White House. And it's not just that President Trump is a person that can easily identify evil from good and go after the evil and stand by the side of the good, but also he surrounded himself this time with amazing people that have moral clarity and understand exactly who the victim and who must be eradicated in this whole Gaza conflict and Hezbollah. And I think Israel could have never asked for a better team than the one that Trump recruited around him this time. We got all the weapon that we paid for and yes, was denied from us. We got it already. We got all the D9 Caterpillar bulldozers finally back here. And we are definitely equipped to phase two and into whatever is needed in order to finish and win this war. We have to win this war.
I had Michelle Bachmann on air last week, and I played a clip with her on air with me of the World Economic Forum guys stating we are the losers. Can you imagine a globalist outfit blatantly coming out and saying, because Donald Trump won, we are the losers? Amazing.
Yeah, they're panicking right now. Everybody understands that you cannot fool the American administration anymore. But I think that it's beyond the World Economic Forum. I think the World Health Organization, I think that the USAID, I think that all of those organizations are now, they understand party is over, the bank is closed.
Mm-hmm. Amir, you said, sort of quoting you here, that the aftermath of October 7th, 2023 was worse than the aftermath of the Holocaust. How is this possible? Help us understand.
I know that obviously the Holocaust of World War II was far greater, mm-hmm. extended longer time with 6 million Jews murdered. But what happened after the Holocaust? The Jewish people were known to be the victims. And of course, the State of Israel was born and the world rallied somehow to help us. What we saw on October 7th is exactly the opposite. We were invaded. We were butchered. We were burned alive. We were raped. We were killed. We were kidnapped. And the very same day, riots and rallies all around the world against us. And the interesting thing is the outcome of the Holocaust, which is the State of Israel, became the reason for the second Holocaust that we had on October 7th. So it's very interesting how the world so easily forgets the first Holocaust. And for years I was struggling. How can it be that such a well-documented genocide during World War II can be denied by anyone? And then came October 7th, and you have even more documentation, and it was denied faster than ever. So this is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about an amazing brainwashing and psych op that was launched on Israel that very same day. It was well orchestrated, well organized, and well executed.
So it seems what you're saying and what I'm perceiving is that a mindset went around the world. It's not a new mindset. It's anti-Israel, anti-Jewish, etc. But there are voices, and I'm going to play two of those voices and then get your comment. Two of these voices should know better. Two of them are even conservative icons, at least in America. One would be Candace Owens, and I'm going to play her in just a second, and you're going to hear her. She is so proud. She's even got a clever smile of satisfaction on her face. And folks, you can watch the video version of our program and see all of this, that she has been titled the Anti-Semite of the Year.
Happy Monday from London. And it is a happy Monday indeed, because I won. I didn't expect it. I played it cool, but it's recently now been announced that it is me. I am the Anti-Semite of the Year. Yeah, I was named by the watchdog group, appropriately named Stop Anti-Semitism, because apparently Jewish people everywhere are terrified when they wake up and they envision who to be terrified about. It's little old me. We've definitely got to discuss that.
And now, just a quick clip. Again, you folks are listening to him. Tucker Carlson, who is bragging about, well, he may not be boasting, but he's misrepresenting Israel, to put it mildly, that they are intentionally killing civilians.
If you're intentionally killing civilians, you probably shouldn't beat your chest and brag about it. Maybe you can make the
case. I agree with that.
Maybe you make the case that we had to do it or whatever, but you should.
I agree.
You should weep, and that's evil, and you should just say it's evil. And I know it's really threatening to.
Is it evil?
Ben Shapiro to say that or whatever.
But is it evil?
To kill civilians on purpose? Yeah, it is. I think it is.
Really?
Kids and children? Well, how is it not, actually?
In a war?
We can call it whatever you want. How is it right to kill women and children?
I didn't say, well, because I think there is a moral right behind you if you are literally...
To kill women and children?
If there's a world war that threatens the entire... If it threatens the entire world, yes.
Some people killed your kids, like your 8-year-old?
Like, well,
how
your
is
own
that
children.
Morally justifiable?
Well, because actually you have to... Well, by your criteria...
It's disgusting.
Okay, it's nothing... So no war is morally justified.
I mean, I think it's pretty hard to justify... I mean, yeah, I'm
any
sure...
Any war.
You know, a pure defensive action, sure. But all I'm saying, look, it's all ugly. It's all hard to stomach. I've actually seen some of it up close. It's super ugly.
You can say that you say you hate it. The fact you quibble with it being morally justified.
To intentionally kill non-combatants, women and children, I think we can say that's wrong. In fact, I thought that was the thing we were fighting against.
Amir Sarfati, Israel may be the most humane military anywhere. You are a part of it.
Yes. I'm a part of it, and I'm disgusted by what I hear, because we lost so many soldiers just because we would never intentionally kill women and children. And the ratio between the combatant and civilians in the Gaza war is the lowest in warfare history. And that's why I am so amazed at this direct hatred and bogus accusation of Israel, because he should know better. This is supposedly a journalist that likes to go deep and know the truth. And he always loved to look at the fringes, and he will never, ever go in and ask the real people what really going on. He did the same thing during the war when he interviewed a pastor from Bethlehem in order to paint Israel as a country that is persecuting Christians. And then you have no idea how many of the Arab Christian Israelis were outraged at what they heard, because that anti-Semitic pastor in Bethlehem has 30 people in his congregation. He's politically motivated against Israel, and he cannot and should not represent anyone. But Tucker wanted him on his show because he wanted to underline a narrative. And that's exactly what he did with Piers Morgan right now. He came already with the assumption that Israel intentionally, and even bragging for intentionally killing women and children, which is not the case. If anyone, it's Hamas that is hiding behind children and women in order for them to get killed and then accuse Israel for their death. Everyone knows that. Hamas knows that. The Gazans knows that. America knows that. And Tucker would always side with the wrong people when it comes to Israel. So Candace, I don't know what happened to her. Ever since she converted to Catholicism and got married with that guy, she lost it. I'm not sure why. These people are now even insinuate that JFK was killed because of Israel. There is no end to their derangement against Israel. So I used to like both of them, and I used to follow them. Something happened to them in the last 3-4 years. I don't know what, but they have turned into something that is dangerous. And I'm going to say this. You can be anti-Semite. That's fine. There's a lot of them around the world. Not that I agree with that. But don't ever use the name of Jesus in all of this. And what Candace does, she always tweets with Christ is King. And all of her followers immediately adopt this whole thing. And they put a front of very moral Christians who loves Jesus. They don't know Jesus. If they knew him, they would have never, ever come against his people the way they do and spread hatred and anti-Semitism. So as far as I'm concerned, she might one day say, Lord, I did this and that. And he will say, I don't even know you.
Yes. Well, I think what happened, Amir, is Israel derangement syndrome. This spread around the world back in late 2023 as a result of October 7th. We saw globally cheering for Hamas, and we've seen cheering for Hamas ever since. And we must denounce Israel globally. So somehow I think that demonic spirit, and who knows, I'm sure they were predisposed to it before October 7th, but they certainly are caught up in this cheering for Hamas, or I just call it Israel derangement syndrome. If you just joined me, you are listening to Understanding the Times Radio. Jan Markell, I have on the line, this time from the West Coast, Amir Sarfati, and you can learn a lot more at beholdisrael.org. Again, we carry two of his books and workbook, Discovering Daniel and Revealing Revelation. Find that at olivetreeviews.org, olivetreeviews.org, and just go to my online store, beholdisrael.org, and again, sign up for his Telegram channel. I'm one of the biggest advocates of that. I'm going to play a clip of you, Amir, and then I want to come back and talk about it. Here you are talking about Islam needs to be neutered or defeated or diluted. Probably Gog and Magog is going to allow that to happen. And then we come to some information on the Temple Mount. And I think that is very much on the minds of lots of people. Let's play this clip and then come back and discuss it.
Will the Antichrist be of Jewish descent, another nationality, and will he be responsible for building the third temple? We don't have 5 hours, but I will tell you, first of all, that the building of the temple is something that the Jewish people are going to do. Definitely, they need approval from a world leader in order to do something that potentially could bring World War III or IV, depends when. But I will tell you that the Jewish people don't look at the Messiah as a God. And so obviously when they will have the wrong choice, the wrong pick, it will be a man. And obviously him bringing peace, prosperity, and allow them to build a temple will definitely help them to see him or in him messianic components that are essential for them to move to a level of worshiping God for the first time in 2,000 years from a temple in Jerusalem. For a temple to be built on Temple Mount in Jerusalem, you cannot have Islam as a major religion that is threatening the world. Islam has to come to a point where it is defeated and diluted. And what am I trying to say? In the Ezekiel war of Ezekiel 38 and 39, although Russia, from economic reasons, will lead it, it will be the Turkish and the Persians, the Iranians, that will come from their own reasons. And of course, they are under their auspices is the radical Muslim groups. And once they are defeated, I believe that hundreds of millions of Muslims will have to say, okay, it's not working. And radical Islam is not working. And what is Islam anyway? And when the Antichrist is going to rise from what I believe Western Europe is today, from where the Roman Empire came to destroy the Second Temple, I believe that he will somehow introduce a new world religion that will not necessarily make you think that you're giving up everything else, but it will be Christless one, obviously, because the worship is the worship of the dragon. It's the worship of Satan, but under many, many different
masks.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And when that happens, why not having a spiritual awakening in the Middle East in the midst of a victory that God will win for Israel in Ezekiel 38? And so there will be messianic aspirations in Israel. And in the midst of the messianic aspirations, after God won the war for them, they'll actually vote for the wrong person as if he is the Messiah. Because he's offering them something that nobody ever offered before, a temple to be built and worship to be resumed there. But it's the same person who will then, 3.5 years later, stop the sacrifice, enter the temple, and say, I am God. Worship me.
Amir, you said so much there, but I want to pick up on your closing thought. You said God wins the war for them, but they turn around and lean towards the Antichrist because he's going to offer them a temple. Help us understand this.
This is not the first time Israel is enjoying the victory that God provides, but then foolishly making bad choices after that. I mean, we see that all throughout the Old Testament, of course, and even in the New Testament. Jesus came and died for us, and yet as a nation, we rejected him. So it's not like it should surprise anyone. I think that the Bible is clearly stating that when a Jew turns to Christ, that's when the veil, until then, there is a veil. And the veil was there. Obviously, they hardened their hearts, but God also gave them a spirit of stupor, eyes they cannot see and ears that they cannot hear. And that was, of course, part of God's way to reach out to the Gentiles.
Yes.
And through their fall, as Romans 11 says, salvation was given to the Gentiles. My prediction, of course, is that Israel as a nation will make that mistake and follow the one that introduced to them not just peace and not just prosperity, but the big prize. I mean, the temple himself. And by the way, after October 7th, one of the things I notice is there's a huge exodus from secularism and hedonism all the way towards Judaism. And more Jewish people that once never believed even in God are now in the new circle of they want to believe in God, they want to see the temple built, they want to see Messiah comes. It's a package deal. And so I see that the aftermath of October 7th, and once everything will be over with this war, there will be a political big bang in Israel that will emerge new movements and new political movements, but also social ones that will push more and more and more for a more firm stand on Israel's right over the land, over Jerusalem, and over the Temple Mount. And so I see the ground becoming ready for that. And it'll take one more big war for the Jews to say, enough is enough. We want a temple.
Thank you for that clarification. That's very, very helpful. So we have seen for the last almost 16 months, Israel being prepared for, let's just say, a last days rule. But how did October 7th, again, going back to 2023, how has that furthered their role being prepared for the Antichrist? Now, you just outlined some of it, and I appreciate that clarification. But how has this hostage crisis prepared their mindset for their final day role?
I believe that finally all of us understand who we're up against. And we finally understand that peace with these monsters is not going to happen. We finally understand that a Palestinian state basically is an idea that should be completely removed from the table. And for Israel to be safe and secure and prosperous, yeah, it can only happen when we have no enemies that are trying to kill us day and night at our border. So I think that Israel is going unashamedly, is going to say enough is enough. If the Palestinians don't want to live next to us, they need to leave this place. And we're watching it. And again, this is the first time in the history of this modern state of Israel, a prime minister will sit with the U.S. president in the Oval Office, and all they will speak about is not concessions of Israel in the West Bank and not concessions of Israel in Gaza. It's about displacing the Gazans. So it's about moving them away. And it's about Israel staying now in Lebanon, in southern Lebanon, in the northern border, and Israel keeping parts of Syrian soil that we just took in the aftermath of the fall of Assad. These are historic things. These are amazing things. And again, these might be the excuse later on of others to come against us. Hey, you're still holding this land, and hey, you're still holding that land. But Israel is positioning itself right now as the most strongest component in the Middle East that moderate countries such as the UAE and Saudi Arabia, at this point, it's kind of moderate, mm-hmm, I mean, compared to all the others, they want to flock around Israel and they want to have Israel as its protector rather than anything else. Make no mistake, there is no great love between Turkey and Saudi Arabia and between Iran and Saudi Arabia and between Russia and Saudi Arabia. So I do believe that Israel will be the center point in that peace that started with the Abraham Accords will expand, of course, during Trump's administration. Yeah. And that will cause the countries to envy. That will cause the country to be jealous and to want what we have. And the minute the U.S. support in Israel will diminish or will be gone, they'll immediately make a move and come against us.
I'm thinking of the verse in Jeremiah 6. I'm thinking of it all the time. Peace, peace, when there is no peace. Is this not setting the stage for Jeremiah 6?
Yes, it is, because we will think there is peace.
Yes.
But then what are we going to get? A bigger war. There's no doubt about it. And even after the Ezekiel war, they will say peace, peace. And then the Antichrist will bring about even bigger disaster upon us. So obviously, it's not until Jesus will come back with us that Israel will truly have peace. But you're right. I think that we're setting ourselves right now to a illusion that it's going to be a long-lasting peace.
God wants the Israeli people to be thinking about him. And I'm quoting you here. You have said before they can believe in the Son of God, Jesus, they must believe that there is a God. And isn't that happening, though, as we speak, to some degree?
Yes, it is. As I said, the October 7 caused many Israelis to think twice about why they are here, who they are, why is it that we're being hated? And if we're being hated as Jews, no matter what our political views are, why don't we just be proud of being Jews and not always try to hide it? So a lot of them start going back to synagogues, yes, start getting closer and closer to Judaism. And with that comes, of course, the strong conviction that there is a God. That's the step forward that they made.
Amir Sarfati, how can my audience pray for you? My goodness, you are globetrotting literally around the world, but how can we pray for you?
Pray, first of all, for my team and my family, because when they are okay, then I am okay. Mm-hmm. I need a lot of strength to stay healthy and to be wise what to take and what not to take, where to go and where not to go. But mostly, once we open Connect in Galilee, I think the doors to bring the good news to the local Israelis are now wide open. So just pray that this whole shift in the ministry in Israel will see more and more fruits for the kingdom.
Say, folks, I hope you will stick around for part two of today's programming. Pastor Gary Hamrick will be our guest. I have learned to listen whenever he speaks. Pastor Josh Schwartz and Ken Michael, talk to him next. Don't go away. We're coming right back.
We hope you'll stay in touch with us online through olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. You can call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. Write us through the mail at Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. In this age of deception, delusion, fake news, and false teaching, thank you for trusting Olive Tree Ministries and Understanding the Times Radio. We invite you to visit our active ministry website. There you will find the current and past radio programs, daily headlines, our online store, our print and electronic newsletter, and all upcoming events. You will also find our prayer wall. Here you can post prayer needs and also answers to prayer. You can also find videos of all past events, such as our Understanding the Times activities. Find all of these and more at olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Have you thought about inviting one of our reps to your church or conference? Find all contact information for Pastor Josh Schwartz and Ken Michael at olivetreeviews.org as well. And pastors, find information on our May Pastors Huddle at the link as well. This ministry will continue to help you understand the times and contend for the faith in 2025. We want all to become watchmen on the wall as we cast the nets upon the waters and await His return. So check out all of these options at olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org.
Empathy can be a wonderful thing and should be exercised, but in a wonderful, healthy way, not embracing all these wrong ideologies that can help people think that the lie is actually the truth, which is what Isaiah said, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil." We're living in those days right now.
We know you can't always be by a radio, so if you miss a program, visit our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org, and then go to radio, where we feature both the audio and video version of our program. You can also catch the program at oneplace.com, on our Rumble or YouTube channel, on all of our social media, and on His channel, Christian TV. In our closing segment, Ken Michael and Josh Schwartz wrap up today's discussion with Pastor Gary Hamrick. Here is the balance of today's programming.
President Trump wasting no time, meanwhile, on track to sign scores of executive actions on this day one of his administration, among them declaring a national emergency at the southern border, declaring an energy emergency, and reversing many of former President Biden's initiatives.
Signing orders on the economy, gender, and immigration, declaring that national emergency at the southern border, reinstating the Remain in Mexico policy, and designating cartels as foreign terrorist organizations.
It will henceforth be the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female.
Well, Tracy Blair, President Donald Trump has issued an order to stop federal funding, sponsorship, promotion, and assistance for gender-affirming care for children under the age of 19. This executive order says the U.S. government will not fund or support, quote, the so-called transition of a child from one sex to another, and it will rigorously enforce all laws that prohibit or limit these destructive and life-altering procedures.
President Trump keeps his promise to get wokeness out of the United States Armed Forces as he signs multiple executive orders to reshape the military.
The latest ones came last night, and what they do is reinstate troops who refused the COVID vaccine, about 8,000 people, develops an American Iron Dome missile defense system like what they have in Israel, formulate a new policy on transgender troops. That is up to Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, to figure out how that's going to work, and then ban DEI initiatives in the military.
It will be a manufacturing nation once again, and we have something that no other manufacturing nation will ever have, the largest amount of oil and gas of any country on earth, and we are going to use it.
Welcome to Understanding Our Times. I'm Ken Michael, along with my co-host, Pastor Josh Schwartz. Well, many changes are happening in America to both our domestic and foreign policies. We'll discuss these and the new strategic partnership between Russia and Iran with our guest today. You can hear our guest on his radio broadcast, Cornerstone Connection. He's the senior pastor of Cornerstone Chapel in Leesburg, Virginia. I'd like to welcome Pastor Gary Hammer. Gary, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Pastor Josh, for having me. I appreciate it.
Gary, in one of your recent sermons, you discussed a number of recent changes coming to America. Let's walk through some of these executive orders that have been revised from the previous administration. And let's start at the border where Trump declared a national emergency. Many on the left, as we know, are extremely upset over this. Tell us some of the short-term and long-term effects of this new border policy.
I told our congregation that national security is what's important, and the border is so porous that it threatens our national security. So what President Trump has done is reinforced the borders of the United States of America, which is a good thing. I don't know why people think it's a good thing to just let people pour over into our country illegally. We are all in favor of legal immigration. This is the melting pot of the world, America. But when the former Biden administration just allowed people to cross our border, and they said they vetted some, but it's ridiculous to think that they were really vetted well, because we know that a lot of criminals have come across our southern border. Even our northern border has some issues too. But what President Trump has done is to help secure our national security. So that's the immediate short-term ramifications, which is beneficial to our country. And the long-term, this is also going to help preserve our national security. So I struggle with why people think it's a bad thing to have borders. God in the Bible, he was into borders. He outlined for the 12 tribes of Israel borders for which they were to occupy. So he's okay with borders and boundaries, national boundaries, countries. God has ordained those things. So I don't know why people object to it. Sometimes I hear on the news, people talk about, well, we only should be worried about the criminal illegal aliens. The fact of the matter is, everyone who comes into our country without the legal way to come into our country is a criminal, because they're breaking the law by coming in illegally. I'm excited and thankful that we have a president who is willing to make our borders more secure. We have millions who have poured over. Nobody even knows for sure how many. Are we talking 10, 12, 15, 20 million who have come into our country illegally? We have all of these gang issues as a result. So this is a good thing for America.
And I think you make a great point there. With anyone who comes over illegally is a criminal. Breaking one law makes you a criminal. And therefore, there has to be consequences for that lawless thing that you've done. Pastor Gary, President Trump has also declared a national energy emergency. And in moving forward with his Drill Baby Drill initiative, can America become energy independent, not only with petroleum and natural gas, but maybe even electricity as well?
Absolutely. I think we have the resources to do it here in America. President Trump always talks about liquid gold under our feet. We have an abundance of natural resources. The issue is, are we tapping into it? And what happened in the last administration, and what's very common in the progressive left, is that they value the environment over the natural resources. So you have more protection for the spotted owl, more protection for certain types of fish, more protection for other kind of wildlife, and that hamstrings us in terms of energy. So then what we end up doing is, we go to other countries. We become dependent on other countries for our energy sources, when in fact we have it here in America, but we have elevated environment over our natural resources. By protecting all of these environmental issues, we are becoming dependent on foreign nations for our energy resources. Look, we want to be good stewards of our environment. Sometimes Christians push back on me because I jokingly refer to how the Bible says, you know what, the whole earth is going to burn. You talk about global warming, we're going to have global warming whenever God decides to burn the earth. So aside from that, we should be good stewards of what God has given us, but we shouldn't worship the environment. We shouldn't worship the world, which was what Paul talks about in Romans chapter 1 and 2, where he talks about how people will start to worship creation over creator. And when we start worshiping the created things above the creator, then we elevate environment. And when we elevate environment, it does certain things to our energy resources, like, oh, we can't tap into these things because we don't want to disturb the environment. The whole green energy policies have in many ways bankrupt our country in terms of energy resources. I think it's another good thing. that President Trump is doing, the drill, baby, drill. Like, let's get the oil, the natural resources. I just saw yesterday on the news how California has spent over $1 billion on solar energy that has not been effective. And they're ready to close down this big solar energy field in the desert of California because it cost more than it is saving. Some of these things are just more common sense stuff, which is what President Trump has run on.
And it's interesting you bring up the Green New Deal initiative and such, yeah, and how they're maybe walking these things back, because my next question is this. We are embarking in a huge project to construct data collection and storage facilities with Stargate. And we know, it's just common knowledge, that collection of data, storage of data, and even AI technology requires massive amounts of energy. Even Bill Gates now is jumping in on this. His energy company called TerraPower has broken ground on a new nuclear power plant in Wyoming. And on top of that, Microsoft signed a 20-year deal to buy power from Three Mile Island, a nuclear power plant in Pennsylvania. Is this now a move away from Green New Deal policies and politics?
I hope it is. This whole nonsense about carbon footprint and all of this, certain gases, it's becoming something that people worship. Again, it shouldn't surprise us. This is what the Bible predicts, that we will worship creation instead of the creator. I hope we are moving away from the Green New Deal. Again, we need to be sensible. We don't want to trash our country or the world, but we can't elevate it to the place where it is dictating how we live. Bill Gates, of all people, you would think that maybe he's getting wise to some of these things, but I hope we all are, because technology is advancing. The energy that it takes to perform these different kinds of technology is important.
How does this all deal with a Christian perspective of the dominion mandate from Genesis?
God has given us dominion. So because people start to worship created things more than the creator, we're inverting that dominion policy. God's given us dominion. So we should exercise it wisely, but carefully, in accordance with what scripture has given us. Man should not be beholden to created things. We should be in charge and overseeing and good stewards of what God has given us, but not beholden to those things.
We know that the leftist globalist agenda isn't just going to give up and go away and say, we lost, that's it. We just saw that the DNC has elected a new leader. And I want to play a short clip here and get your reaction.
We have an amazing group of new officers so far. As you know, our three at-large vice chair positions are used to ensure gender balance among seven offices. Our rules specify that when we have a gender non-binary candidate or officer, the non-binary individual is counted as neither male nor female, and the remaining six offices must be gender balanced. With the results of the previous four elections, our elected officers are currently two male and two female. In order to be gender balanced, we must elect one male, one female, and one person of any gender.
Pastor Gary, listening to that clip, we now know that the president is moving forward to dismantle wokeness in our government, public school system, the military, and he's making it clear that there are only two genders, just as the Bible says. What does this mean for people who go to work at these agencies? Are they going to get pushback? How is this going to affect them?
Isn't it sad that we're living in a day when the president of the United States has to issue an executive order that was already given by God in Genesis 1:27? We're at a place in our country right now, and really in different places around the world, where this is just nonsense for us to think that there are more than two genders. God makes it clear, Genesis 1:27, male and female, he created them, and he created us in his image. And so again, what President Trump ran on is common sense. And I love that one of his executive orders on day one was recognizing that there are only two genders as far as the federal government is concerned. And I hope it trickles down to the rest of the country. There's just male and female. In his executive order, President Trump said that it was, quote, defending women from gender ideology extremism and restoring biological truth to the federal government. For people who work in these federal agencies, I hope it'll be liberating for some people. Guys, I've begun to notice, and I'm sure you guys have too, that all of a sudden, people who were aligning with the woke ideology have come back to their senses. And a lot of people are recognizing, okay, some of this stuff is just nonsense, the DEI stuff, the multiple gender stuff. And it's because I think President Trump has like given them cover. Now that he has become popular. He won the popular vote, won the Electoral College, and people are realizing, okay, I guess it's safe to say that there's only two genders. So I think it's going to be liberating for a lot of people who were having to play the political correctness game, who now are able to say there's only two genders. So I'm hoping for federal workers, this will be liberating for many of them who don't have to play the game anymore. But for others, yeah, naturally, like the clip you just showed, they're still tone deaf. The progressive liberals are not understanding what Americans voted for in this past election here in November. It's this return to common sense truth. And they're still tone deaf. They're like, we're going to vote for a male and a female and someone else of whatever gender. There's no such thing. So they're not waking up to what truth is. And they're not aligned with where America is right now. And I pray America stays there, because we all know usually the political pendulum swings. And I hope in a few more years, it doesn't swing the other direction. I hope we're on a new course for America.
Staying on this topic, what should followers of Christ be doing now that we have this reprieve that we're witnessing? Our passion has been with kids and children. How should we combat this demonic delusion that we should be teaching children that there's multiple genders, that they can take hormone blockers, and God forbid they go through transition surgery? What do we need to be doing? Because I believe now is the time that we can't give up and we have to keep up the fight even stronger.
I totally agree with you, Ken. In fact, you used a word reprieve and I've used the same word. I feel like the Lord has given us a reprieve, which means this is just a calm right now that we need to take advantage of, but we can't become disengaged because, yeah, the fight is still on. I had somebody call me a few months ago, this was before the election, and he said to me that his five-year-old son is in a class. Get this, you're 5 years old, you're in kindergarten, and another boy in his class was coming in dressed in a little girl's dress. And he was asking me, what should I do? Should I pull my kid out of this class? And I said, well, you need to talk to the teacher first, and if you can't get that boy to get back into boy's clothes, then yeah, you should pull your kid out. You know what's so tragic, guys, is that in this case of this phone call, this guy, this friend of mine, it was the mom of that little boy who was pushing this. She was the one who said, well, I think my little son really identifies as a girl, so I'm going to dress him. I mean, parents are culpable. There are many parents out there. A kindergarten kid has no clue about gender ideology and gender dysphoria, but a mom is pushing this. So it really starts with the parents. And as Christians, we have to stay continually in the fight, because it is just that. This is a spiritual battle. Just like you said, this is demonic stuff that is happening in our world, trying to convince children especially that you're not born correctly, that God made a mistake, and you need to be whatever gender you want to identify as. This is what I call emotional child abuse. I use that term here in our church. Cornerstone Chapel is here in Loudoun County. I made mention of that. I used that term, and I said, whenever we are foisting upon the next generation this idea that you can choose whatever gender you want, that's emotional child abuse. The Loudoun Democratic Party put out a press release against me saying I need to recant my words. Recant truth? I mean, it is emotional child abuse to try to convince a child that they can be whatever gender they want instead of helping them to embrace the beautiful design that God created them biologically to be. So Christians have to stay aware that this issue is not going to go away, because we know the prince of the air is still trying to deceive people, lie to people. Satan is a liar and the father of lies. So all this stuff that's going out into our culture, we just have a reprieve, like you said, Ken, but the battle's not over. We still have to stay in the fight. And I think also, I could be mistaken, I don't have the stats in front of me, but I think it is something like 97% of kids that do have gender confusion when they're younger, they outgrow it. There's some normalcy to wondering about biology and your body and all this kind of stuff, but the vast majority of them, they outgrow it. And if we start to coddle and we start to celebrate the confusion, it'll lead to more confusion by people just watching. And then the message is, oh, I guess this is normal when it's not normal.
It's amazing to me how we've watched over the last 50 years, the mainstream church has gone away from the inspiration and authority of the scriptures and started embracing emotionalism. So this comes in through the churches. It's seen as acceptable. And even I would call them nominal Christian parents don't know where to stand and how to stand against these evil doctrines of demons. And it's no wonder that our country is on a slippery slope towards destruction.
Pastor Josh, you're right. I was at an event last week in D.C. and Ali Beth Stuckey was at the same event. She was speaking, and she wrote a book recently called Toxic Empathy. And to your point, we've made a culture now that's very empathetic, and we just want to please everybody. We want to affirm everybody, and it's actually toxic. Empathy can be a wonderful thing and should be exercised, but in a wonderful, healthy way, not embracing all these wrong ideologies that can help people think that the lie is actually the truth, which is what Isaiah said. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil. We're living in those days right now.
We absolutely are. One more quick question about executive orders before we transition to the second half of our program. And it's this. Another executive order was written to reinstate with back pay those in the military who were discharged for not receiving the COVID vaccine. Do you think we are going to see an end to the mandated medical treatments in the future? And will this slow down the WHO's agenda to initiate a global health emergency?
I certainly hope so. I know personally a few military personnel that were relieved of duty because they refused to take the COVID vaccine. I have a lieutenant colonel that serves on the board of our school that we started a couple of years ago. He was telling me, though, that among the 8,000 or so that were relieved of duty, only a small fraction will come back now because they've either found other jobs or they're going to come back at the same rank they were a few years ago when all their peers have advanced in rank. So there's some difficulty, I guess, to that. But I love what President Trump did by removing the mandate, giving the military back pay, restoring them if they want to come back to the military is a wonderful thing. And whatever we can do to distance ourselves from the World Health Organization is a good thing, too, because there's an agenda there. But there's some people in the world who obviously think that the World Health Organization is a good thing. And no doubt, every organization that I might have issues with, there's probably some element that they're doing a good thing. But when you know that there's an organization that actually has an agenda, and part of their agenda is gender ideology, part of their agenda is controlling the globe through a medical crisis, this is all playing into the hands of what we see coming down the road. Revelation talks about a one world government. And I think that the health issue might be something in the future that the Antichrist uses or the 10 Nation Confederation uses to try to get global dominance. Look how over COVID things started to centralize in terms of power and the power that we were ready to relinquish to World Health Organization. So it's a good thing for President Trump to issue some of these executive orders to get us away from these COVID mandates and to distance ourselves from WHO.
Gary, let's transition here. Recently, Russia and Iran just made a new strategic partnership treaty, and it could have major implications on the world stage, and especially in the Middle East. I want to play another short clip here, and we'll discuss it.
Iran and Russia are expected to sign a major new strategic partnership treaty during a visit to Moscow by Iran's president.
And this deal has the world on alert because it's between two of the West's biggest rivals. A comprehensive strategic partnership between Russia and Iran. They're talking about their relationship. They're taking it to the next level in every field.
The use of drones in the Ukraine conflict has not just terrorized people on both sides. It's also transformed Russia's relationship with Iran and influenced the shape of what's being called an historic new deal governing ties between the two countries. Iran allegedly supplies most of the drones Russia deploys in Ukraine, and according to the US, has also delivered short-range ballistic missiles. This new role as Moscow's main military supplier has enabled Tehran to gain leverage.
Russia and Iran already have very good ties. They've been working together for years. In fact, they already had an agreement in place. It was signed in 2001. However, this new deal is an upgrade. It will last for 20 years and cover a range of issues.
And it's not just defense ties that are being put on a new footing. After their first meeting in October 2024, the two presidents said they had many similar views on world affairs and were keen to expand cooperation in all areas, economically, culturally, and in the international arena.
You see, Russia has been shoring up its alliances for a while. Last year, it signed treaties with North Korea and Belarus. Both included mutual defense clauses. Russia promised to intervene if the two countries were invaded, North Korea and Belarus. But the new deal with Iran does not seem to have that clause. And this was made public before the signing of the deal. Iran said it was not interested in this mutual defense. And this will come as a relief to the West, especially the US and Israel. The Iran-Israel rivalry is not going anywhere. The last thing the world needs is an excuse for Russia and the U.S. to fight directly.
You are listening to Understanding Our Times. Our guest today is Pastor Gary Hamrick, Cornerstone Chapel, Leesburg, Virginia. Pastor Gary, you heard in this clip there's a renewed strategic alliance between Russia and Iran. So what do you think this means? We'll start out geopolitically.
I've been following the alliance between Russia and Iran really since 2007. I remember when Putin had an alliance with then the president of Iran was Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and you started to see this formation of a friendship like never before. In 2005, 6, and 7, Russia and Iran were coming together like never before. This latest one between Putin and now the current president of Iran, Pezeshkian, is really, I think, the result of the Ukraine war. Because according to your clip, and I agree from things that I've read, that Russia turned to Iran because of the war of Ukraine for the technology with drones. They've formed an alliance in this way. And now we're seeing this friendship coming together. But also, Russia doesn't seem to have the same kind of agreement that they do with Iran, that they do with North Korea, where they would step in and defend the country in the event of military attack. And I wonder if that's because Russia knows that both Israel and the United States might have to take action against Iran, particularly because of their nuclear technology. So Russia didn't want to get into a battle with the United States or Israel. But it still has to play itself out a little bit. Of course, it shouldn't surprise us as Christians. We see an alliance, Ezekiel 38 and 39, at some point. If this is not it that leads to the battle of Ezekiel 38 and 39, then it will come at some point because it talks about Gog and Magog. Now, Gog is just a word for prince or czar. Magog is the land of the ancient Scythians, and Herodotus and Josephus both said that was the people around the Black Sea. So we're talking Russia. And then it speaks in Ezekiel about Magog forming an alliance with Persia. Well, Persia was the name for Iran until 1935. So these things the Bible tells us will happen. And we're seeing some of this coming together and this friendship forming between Russia and Iran, even though right now a lot of the news says it doesn't constitute a military alliance. Well, of course it does. You're starting to give drone technology and other assistance in the war with Ukraine. You're forming a military alliance. Who are we kidding?
Yeah. And you're right. When you take a literal grammatical historical approach to even Bible prophecy, you see these things unfolding. And now we don't want to do newspaper exegesis, but we do want to take seriously what God says about his promises. So thank you for putting geopolitical and biblical dots together for us.
As we wrap up here, Pastor Gary, Trump wants to continue a ceasefire agreement, and it appears that Netanyahu is willing to go along with this. However, his party is willing to back out of it and disassemble if they don't take out Hamas. How do you think this is all going to shake out? What's the final conclusion to this?
Prime Minister Netanyahu is in one of the most difficult spots. He's trying to get hostages out, but he's trying to also finish the job. Personally, I'm not sure you can do both. I don't know how you can finish the job of eliminating Hamas and successfully getting the hostages out. I pray that there is some way to do it, but already Israel has made concessions for, at first it was more than 1,000, and of late I've heard around 2,000 Palestinian terrorists being released for a handful of Israeli hostages. It's disproportionate. And when you release Palestinian terrorists back into the population, you'll never eliminate the Hamas forces. If a seed is allowed to germinate, then it will come back in some full force. I've called our congregation to pray for Israel, pray for Prime Minister Netanyahu, because Hamas needs to be eliminated. And how do you do that and still recover our hostages? I say our, because I feel for the Israeli people, and some are still American hostages. I don't know how both are accomplished, but he's meeting with President Trump, and I pray that the two of them come together for some strategy. I think President Trump has put some pressure on Israel that I wish wouldn't have happened before he was elected, when he said, if the hostages are not released by the time I get into office, then there's going to be a price to pay. I think that put a pressure unnecessarily on Israel, but praying for the peace of Jerusalem, asking God to give wisdom and favor to Prime Minister Netanyahu.
As you look at everything that has happened over the last 2 years, what is your pastoral exhortation to the church and to our listeners?
probably more than 2 years. I'd say closer to 4 or 5 years now, and we started seeing just kind of woke culture and the wild ideology starting to infiltrate our culture. I've just encouraged folks, we have to know what is right from what is wrong, what is true from what is false, what is good from what is evil. And the only way we're going to know that is to stay close to the Lord and in His Word, so that we can be grounded in the truth and in that relationship with Jesus, so that we can discern these things. The issues happening in our culture today should not surprise us. It's going to become more evil till we get closer to the return of Christ. But take heart, lift up your eyes, look up, our redemption draws near. Stay close to Jesus and stay in His Word.
Pastor Gary, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. As we wrap up here, how can people get in touch with you?
They can go to our website at cornerstonechapel.net. They can get in touch with me there. And thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to dialogue with you. Bless you, Ken. Bless you, Pastor Josh.
It's been our pleasure. And if you haven't heard one of Pastor Gary's sermons, I would encourage you all to check him out at Cornerstone Chapel in Leesburg, Virginia. Pastor Gary, thank you for your time, and keep up the fight, my friend.
Thank you, guys. God bless you.
Contact us through our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. We get our mail when you write to Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. All gifts are tax deductible. While our times are stressful, remember that we have a front row seat to the last act, and each chapter comes right out of the Bible, allowing all things to fall into place.